You know, this podcast is called The Jam.
The Jam.
The Jam. So when you hear a song, you'd be like, oh, that's my jam, or that's the jam. The Jam. Right? So let that rotate in your head, the idea of a jam. Think of your favorite jams in your head. Like, you know, when it comes on at the party, that's my jam. Or, oh, that, you know, it's on the radio, that's the jam. So you have to just let that soak through. Name like two of your favorite jams right now. Like two top jams that come to mind. Nice. Like when I say the jam, like the two songs that come to mind.
The two would probably be Practice and the original To Practice, which was Juvenile. Like, those two would be like, yes.
Like, she like same.
She like that whole beat. Yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah.
That symphonic.
What was it? Oh, Back That Ass Up.
Back that ass up. Yes.
That whole build up. So, yeah.
Back That Ass Up is the jam. It's the jam.
It
I can't
is
lie.
The jam.
It is the jam. I can't lie. I remember when did
and
that,
it
when
never
did that come
gets
out?
Old.
When did that come
it really
out?
Don't. 99. Really late 98.
Listen, man.
98. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember around 99, at least two things I could count on were Back That Ass Up and the Thong Song.
Oh, yeah. Thong Song. Yeah. Yeah. Thong Song was right there. Thong Song was way bigger at the time. That's the funny part.
Oh, my God.
That was, yeah. They both had dramatic build up.
It's some of our violins.
Symphonic strings and some. Yeah,
build up. Doing squats.
It's like
no
you
other.
Wherever you at, you in the bathroom, you getting the drink. It's like you hit them strings. You run to the floor. You getting your stance right before you say, "Ooh, there goes." Yeah. As soon as he said that part, it's like, yeah.
Ron, I'm putting you to task. The next possible time you can play the Thong Song, please do it.
I DJ. See, most clubs go from 10 to 2 a.m. I can play it at 2:01.
Yeah, because see, here's the thing. The thing about that song is that, like, you gotta pick the right time, I think, to play that song. Because that song got played so much. It got burnt. I think that's one of the songs. I think there's like at least a bucket of songs that are so played out that you gotta like really strategic. You just gotta be right for the moment to pull that song out. And maybe just play the first verse up to the chorus. Yeah. If you play the whole thing, it's because everybody in the place, you know what I'm saying? Like they're like,
it's where, because what I always say about every single year is that when it comes to hit songs, there's always two sides. There's always the songs that become super huge. It's the songs that aren't as big but are big enough. The ones that become super huge, 90% of the time, you don't want to hear them after they burn out.
Right.
So even with 50 Cent in the Club versus Get Low, 50 Cent in the Club was way bigger at the time than Get Low. But you playing both right now in the club, it's like, go. Get Low is still, you're going to get in your stance, you're still going to try to find something.
Right.
So it's weird.
Ying Yang Twins, man. Ying Yang Twins, they tapped into something. They need to come back.
They do.
They messing up.
Yeah, we need that back.
That's the jam. He'll be like, oh shit, 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 that's the jam.
Well, let's go ahead and do the honors. This is the jam, you know. It's your boy Merc 80 in the house with another episode, another fresh episode, man. We hitting you with more and more awesome guests and cool people. Today we got the homie Chris Lehman in the house. What's up, man?
What's going on, man?
Usually we have Kim Lehman here, but she's a little bit under the weather. You know, couldn't really make it today, unfortunately. So, you know, in spirit, she is here. But for our feminine energy for this show, we have a slightly unexpected guest, you know, perfect timing, our friend Monique. Hi, Monique.
Hi there. How's it going?
I'm great. I'm excellent. And our guest for this episode is the one and only, the world famous DJ Artistic. What is the deal?
Not too much. Trying to make something happen. That's all it's about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it's about.
So for those of you who have not heard this podcast before, this is The Jam, and we talk about the jams. It's pretty plain and simple. All of us might have slightly different definitions of what a jam is or what makes a song the jam. Mm-hmm. And so every episode we make sure to define the term of what the jam is. And, you know, my definition has changed a few times. at this point, I think that a jam or something that makes a jam, what I mostly consistently said is the song with the perfect combination of rhythm and melody that makes you involuntarily move. Like you have no choice but to dance or to get excited or to feel, you know, happy, some kind of nostalgia or whatever, but it's automatic. You might only really need to hear the song about two or three times and then you just know it. You know, you just know that that's the jam. So that's my personal definition. We're going to go around the room. What defines the jam? Chris?
Mine has pretty much stayed the same. My definition of a jam is a song that as soon as you hear it, it just immediately grabs you and just puts you into a place where you just have to kind of stop what you're doing and just groove to the music, or, you know, it just catches you. You're like, wait a minute. All right, stop what I'm doing. And it's all about this song right now. My wife, Casey, would add on to that, saying that it's a song that will take you back to a certain place and time from when you remember that song.
Mm-hmm. So continuing around, Monique, what is your definition of the jam?
I stole, like, the perfect definitions. But
you can add on to it.
I'll add, yeah. For me, like, the jam, I actually have a couple songs that make me go from in the club to trying to be classy and just have a nice little drink to, like, yeah.
That ratchet hands.
That one ratchet hands is yes. That I have you going from that to I'll be in the house cooking and I'm just like, you know what? This might burn a little bit, but it's completely worth it. It's that stuff that really, it's a song that kind of makes you just stop and really enjoy being in the moment. Mm. It really just lets you appreciate whatever is being said in that moment. It just kind of puts you, it's just a simple sense of euphoria for me. And the jam is that song that just puts you in a place where I'm content.
Yeah.
And nothing else matters.
I feel that. Artistic.
For me, the jam, I think, to piggyback over what everyone has said, it's basically the same thing. It's where when you hear certain songs, it just hits you a different way. And it's where it could be a sense of nostalgia or it could just be the way the song is composed itself. And it's two sides. It's where some songs really aren't the best songs, but if it just hits you in a way, like, especially with nostalgia, it's where if it's a song you haven't heard since seventh grade, and it's like, that used to be the jam, and it's where if somebody who was young wasn't there to hear it, if they hear it now, they might be like, you actually used to like this? Mm. Like, even, I'll say something like, a lot of those songs from the late 80s where they're singing off-key, like a Michelet-type song sometimes, or even like Kwame Only You, if you weren't there, you just wouldn't catch it. It's just like, because when you hear it off key, it's like, what's good about this? Like, the drums aren't going to appeal to you. It's not a heavy 808 hitting. It's just like whatever was like trendy at the time. But if you were there, it just hits you in a certain way. Uh-huh. That's one side. The other side is just where it has an appeal that's just going beyond just the normal sense of just nostalgia. It's where it has certain elements that do grab you. So like you said, with the melody, it could be the melody to it. It could be the crescendos to it. The way the song builds up and just that certain part grabs you. It could be how Michael Jackson, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, just has the breakdown. Dun, 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 dun. It's just like, whoa. Like, so a lot of songs have that too. So it's where a lot of times on the bigger side, I feel those jams grab people who aren't even a fan of that artist or that genre of music. Even outside of like rap and R&B. Like, if you want to go to rock, like, we're all African-American young. Like, we don't like any rap. But if you put on Nirvana, It Smells Like Teen Spirit, it's just like, I don't know what it does. It's just, it works. Like,
you know, like, one of the things that I almost forgot actually in my definition and actually so far hasn't been knocked over is that every song that's the jam at least has some kind of spirit of blackness in the song. Because even Smells Like Teen Spirit, we said that before, even Smells Like Teen Spirit has like that. When it gets to that chorus, it's like
the way it builds up. You get ready for it. You brace yourself. Like,
right.
You know, it comes in. Yeah.
So far, we have not had a jam that was, you know, that didn't have some kind of black vibe, whether it's African or Caribbean or, you know what I'm saying, Dirty South or whatever, you know what I'm saying, Bay Area. Like, all of it has had some kind of spirit of blackness in it. You know what I mean? So. I can say that, but I don't mean to cut you off.
That's basically it to me. So, I mean, that's how I see it. I feel like, and as far as just the slang word itself, I feel like jam has a 80s, 90s feel to it. So it's where it feels weird calling a brand new song a jam when it has a modern feel. Because whenever I think of jam, I'm thinking of like my 38-year-old older cousin slash younger auntie saying, "That used to be my jam." So really? It's like okay. When you hear a young kid talking about their favorite YG song, they ain't gonna say that. They're gonna be like, "Oh, that song, that's the turn up there. That song had me functioning."
And, but see,
like,
that's the thing, and that's the I actually think that that's slightly a problem because I feel like. I've asked a lot of young people. I've been doing a lot of young people, asking them like, what's your favorite song that's the jam? Like, because the thing is that if Kim was here, she would say that a jam has to have some timelessness to it.
Yeah,
that
you makes know, sense.
And I have a lot of young people that are telling me that they're still listening to stuff that like I grew up on. And I'm like, why are you listening to Outkast right now? Like,
it blew my mind. One time, I remember back in 2009 when like Jerkin just ran LA.
Yeah.
For the high school party. So my first real Jerkin party, I remember the 16-year-old. It was a sweet 16 party. She gave me a list of 20 songs. I had heard of like 4 of the songs and like 8 of the artists. I was like, I didn't know who YG was at the time. I didn't know who Taylor Thurl was. I was like, what are these songs? And I played them all day, danced to them all night, whatever, whatever. So after it's over, I'm packing up. I remember the kids were on YouTube looking at some of the videos, and I was just kind of talking to them like, so do y'all like this music? They were just saying whatever about it. And I think one kid mentioned something about like an old Domino song. I'm like, why do you know who Domino is? Yeah. And then they mentioned something else, and they're just like, oh, yeah, I mean, we like 90s stuff better because it's actually good music. They even said, like, we like this Jerkin stuff because we can dance to it. It's fun, but we know this stuff is all whack. And I was like, wait, it's whack to y'all?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about, like, the jam, it always has this, like, positive reinforcement. Like Turn Up, you think of like, party.
A future song, or is this like...
It only can go so far. Turn Up has its limitations, and everybody knows that. You can turn up only in certain aspects too, and only certain environments.
That's true.
Jam, when you hear like, that's my jam, that's like, that's it. You know, like, I love the concept of like, the jam, my jam, because it always has a positive reinforcement. It's that song that's like, it hits. Like, that's mine.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's the turn up. Okay, cool. It's something that'll get you popping, shaking, cool. But the jam, that'll be something that you have at the barbecue that everybody's like, yo, this was the best barbecue.
Even your auntie is grooving to it. Is this
right?
Like,
it's something that you can laugh at, memories. Yeah. Turn up, nobody really has memories. Yeah. Everybody has blackout.
Exactly.
Blackout.
Here's an example. And I for real, like, I like Pharrell's album overall. But honestly, I think a lot of people are saying that it's played out. But Happy, yo, man, you can play that wherever. Get Lucky. You know what I'm saying? I feel like those were jams. You know what I mean? So
it has your grandma dancing. Like, the fact that Pharrell is somebody who we grew up on, but that your auntie and grandma asked for it more than people our own age, it shows you that it's hitting a whole different demographic.
Right.
And it's hitting your soul in a whole different way. It's like, your auntie ain't going to ask you for no new Future songs. She's not going to ask you for no new...
She might. Depending
she
on
her
auntie.
If she grew up east of the 110, she might. She might. But she over here in Ladera Heights and, you know, she Presbyterian. She ain't asking for that.
You're not playing that at the family reunion, man.
Yeah, not at
you're
all.
You're not doing that, man.
Not at all.
All right, well, let's we pretty much define the terms, I think. That's actually the most, I think, in-depth discussion that we've had in a while of defining that term. We're going to probably go back on that a little bit. But very quickly, let's talk to our new guest host for today, Monique. Monique, where are you from? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
I'm a little all over.
Yeah?
I'm from Los Angeles, born and raised.
Where'd you go to high school?
Where'd you go to high school at?
I graduated from Sonora High in Orange County. Okay. Went to school in West Covina and in Inglewood. So I'm kind of like a little all over Southern Cali, but then I left, after being, I'm mainly Inglewood.
Oh,
let's just keep it that way.
Okay.
Just mainly Inglewood. Right. That's as long as I stayed anywhere.
Cross streets? What cross streets are we talking about? We talking about the trees?
Like, no.
The bottoms?
All the trees?
I'm
the trees?
Like the,
eucalyptus and arborvita?
Part, I'm like La Brea and Centinella.
Oh, okay.
Rouse's,
Okay. Ralph's.
Yeah, I just name it the Ralph's.
The Popeyes?
Section.
24-hour Popeyes.
Right? 24 hours and get your two-piece and a biscuit.
Yes, I need that.
By the DMV? Is that by the DMV?
No,
DMV,
it's a little different. DMV.
Oh, okay,
Hazel.
Okay.
But grew up there, left for a minute, went to my family's original space and did my undergrad at Dillard in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Okay.
Post-Katrina, and then just moved back out here about a year and a half, 2 years now, actually.
Okay.
All right. 2 years. So.
All right. How'd you like it out there? Man. L.A. to L.A. How was it? Was yeah.
It's a lot slower than this L.A., but what I can say is that it's a lot, not to play my hometown, but it's a lot realer. I enjoyed the fact that people really took the time to just enjoy life. It's one big party, which is probably why it's so slow. But at least I know if I was there, I can only go so far as far as career-wise. But if I were to be laying on my deathbed, I can be like, you know, I had one hell of a life if out there. Out here, I love it. I love the atmosphere. I love the diversity. The downfall that can be here in L.A. is that, you know, sometimes if I were to be on my friend's deathbed, it'll be, did I really live for me or did I live for what other people would think of me? Mm-hmm. And that's the downfall between that and this one. It's beautiful out there. The appreciation for music is like no other. Yeah. And it's just not, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, the turn up songs, all that, but it's really... You still have your hole-in-the-wall spots that everybody in the city knows about. You still have a person that'll come from Alabama just to play blues out here. Mm. You know, it's beautiful, and people love it. And, I mean, it's just surrounded by it. And the culture is just people that are so resilient. You know, Hurricane Katrina hit, and half the population was gone. A lot of people left. But the people that came back, they were like, this is our home. This is who we are. There is literally no city like New Orleans. And I know you've seen Tremaine. Everybody says that. But it's really true.
It's true.
It's so true. Mm. And you can just land there, and the humidity will make you want to take a shower the moment you land.
Yeah.
But you fall in love with the city. And it's just a beautiful thing because it just makes you appreciate life. And you it was probably the best 5 years ever.
Awesome. Well,
from perfect. What I remember.
Perfect. you're the perfect person to have on this show because you'll have a much broader perspective as we talk about, you know what I'm saying, this music, as we talk about joy, all that stuff. You know what I mean? So thank you for being here. Thank you. And thank you, Ron. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know what I'm saying? Bringing good people in here into the space. I love it.
For sure.
You know what I mean? We're going to probably ask you a few more questions, but of course we got to bring it to the man of the hour, DJ Artistic. Artistic, for those that don't know you, I mean, you know, tell us a little about yourself, man. Like where you grew up, all that stuff, man. You're originally born and raised in LA.
I'm from here. I grew up born in Inglewood, Gardena. Mm-hmm. Went to high school out here, Bishop Montgomery, went to FAMU, Florida A&M had a cool little 6-year, 10-year there, you know. Uh-huh. That's where I became a DJ. I started producing. I was making beats back in 95. I started rapping in 94, making beats in 95 just to go along with that.
Yeah.
Started producing for The Game in Black Wall Street in 04. So I was close in with them for a couple years. 2007 just became straight DJ when I was in Florida. And then got back here in 08. And then DJing just really started going a different direction. I say 2011, 2012. Mm. That's when it just started to go all the way up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like DJing in Florida? Like, it seems like there's a... different cultures, different places in terms of what DJs have to do. So when you had
it's
to kind of...
a whole different thing. It's where, the thing is, like, everybody who knows the story knows that I only became a DJ because originally I wasn't even a DJ. It was just the fact that I was from L.A. We were in a whole different, you know, region, and it was where they didn't play any West Coast music at the club. Mm. It was where when Blood or Whistle came out, you didn't even hear that. You heard Tell Me When to Go sometimes, and you would hear, like, Snoop drop it like it's hot, but... it was where we would just have West Coast parties, so I would just be playing a playlist off of Windows Media Players. It's all West Coast music.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, because we having barbecue, so I was playing all the East Siders and Sugar Free and Mac Dre and Kick the Sneak that nobody else knew about. So it's where people from other cities and states that we had as friends would come to the party. They'd be like, we'll play our songs too. And at first, I would be like, nah, it's a West Coast party. I ain't playing nothing else. But then after a while, it was where they sold me that cash. I'm like, okay, so if you're paying, okay, I'll do whatever. So speaking of New Orleans, I remember one time... I DJed on the set, like, which is the main part of FAMU campus, and it was like a combination of a group I was in, and New Orleans Club had an event the same day. So when New Orleans Club found out that I was a DJ, they didn't know who I was at the time. They're just like, well, we don't know him. He ain't gonna play nothing but like Lil Wayne. We don't want to hear no Lil Wayne. I'm like, okay, that's cool. That whole night, I just spent the whole night researching everything New Orleans music-wise. As soon as we came on, the first song I played was DJ Jubilee, and I was playing Walking Like Ronald, and I'm playing, you know, Fifth World Weeby songs that only they know. And they're like, wow, like the reaction they got, I was like, hold up a second, like that could be my niche. It's where most these A's are only gonna play the top songs from each region. It's like if you playing East Coast, you playing Jay-Z. If you playing DC, you playing Wale. I realized that that's cool for everybody, but if you really want to get the natives of each city, you gotta play the deep stuff. So for us being from LA, it was where, okay, it's cool that you playing Snoop and Tupac, everybody knows them. If you play Sugar Free or Eastside Is Here, I'm like, hold up a second. Yep, it's gonna go, it's a whole different reaction. Yep. So when I realized that, I was like, let me do that. So the same with Go-Go. I'm playing Overnight Scenario. I'm playing like Rare Essence stuff that only the DC people know. So it was where I was able to kind of develop my whole style. So when I came back to LA, I couldn't jump straight into that style because most of my crowds early on were all LA. So you can't just play Go-Go in like Chicago House for an LA native crowd because they don't know about it. But when I started to kind of build my own following here, which was all HBCU people, it was where I would play everybody's native music and they were like, who is this dude? So that's what really got me on out here. So
see that, and that's interesting too, man, because that one of the things that I know it makes people's ears perk up is because it reminds them of home.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? It reminds them of home, and that'll be their jam that's like nobody else heard it. Exactly. You know, I remember I was visiting some friends over at Howard. What's up, Shannon? I was visiting some folks over at Howard.
What's up, Ashton?
They were playing some go-go stuff, and then some people are from Oakland, they playing something different, and so the Caribbean folks playing something different. But it's interesting because when the song is dope, like, everybody can share in that.
Yeah, you know, people learn, because, I mean, even out here, it's where you can't just play a random go-go or a percolator for just the all LA crowd that doesn't know about it, but when it's an HBCU event where everybody is from somewhere different, all it takes is, I say, a third of the crowd reacts to it. The people who don't know it are at least going to kind of dance to it, and they're going to look like, what is this? And they'll pick up on it. If they hear it three times, it's like, okay, they like it too. So it's where that's how you make songs grow, is just from playing it to where you can't just drop anything. Like, even if I was doing the all-Florida party, when I was do a local party out there, I couldn't play a random, like, super L.A. track. But it's where if I played it for a half L.A. crowd or enough L.A. people were there, it was like they would see it and be like, oh, so this was popping in L.A. Okay, so it made more sense to him that way.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, in terms of, like, doing that research, man, like, it's really interesting that you say that. Like, how much of the research aspect is really important for a DJ? Because I feel like lot of DJs are kind of, they're like, okay, this is hot, I'm going to do that. This is hot, I'm going to do that. They kind of follow the trend, where you're saying, like, you actually kind of really dig deep into, like, what is it that you're really listening to? Like, how do you go about that? Like, how not to give that away in terms of your research technique, but why is that so important?
I mean, I'll give it away because a lot of folks still don't think it's that important until they really see the response it gets. So it's where, even with me, it's where, say if I have a family reunion in Memphis, I'll go to Memphis just not only because it's the reunion, but it's like, let me go out there and just see what they playing. So I'll go to every club. If I'm there for 5 nights, I'm going to the trendiest club, I'm going to the most hood club, I'm going to some in between, I'm going to a mixed club, and I'm just hearing what they play. I might be on Shazam the whole night. I'm just seeing what they respond to. I'm like, so I went to Memphis 2 years ago, and it's like, I noticed out there that at the white clubs, they actually play more LA music. At the super hood club, they didn't play a single song that wasn't from Atlanta or Memphis or Texas or Louisiana. They didn't play any East Coast. You didn't hear no Jay-Z. You didn't hear no Midwest, anything. But it was where, whenever you go to different places, you realize that the more hood of a club it is, the more local music is being played. The more trendy it is, the more mainstream is being played. Yeah. So it's where you have to go to both sides, because it's not going to be the exact same trendy everywhere. It's still going to be a little bit of the local flavor in it involved at the same time. But it's important, because that's how you really grab people. Because, like, when you're doing a trendy spot, like, if I was out here doing a Supper or a Greystone Toxic, it's where that type of crowd is not really – it's where if you playing the regular commercial hits, okay, they're going to dance, but every DJ is playing those same exact songs.
Yep.
It's not really going to matter. But if you just slide that one song in, even with me, I tease stuff. So it's where I'm playing Yo Gotti, you know, Act Right, where he's shouting out Mac Dre.
Yeah.
He say, rest in peace, Mac Dre. I'm going to play a quick – dun, 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 from Thizzle Dance.
Yeah.
So if you're from the Bay, even if I'm not playing the song, they're going to hear it and be like, well, he knows that. So it's like, people really pay attention to you that way. It's like, who is this DJ?
They do.
When you're just playing the same hits, even if they dance, it's like, oh, he was tight. But, I mean, every DJ plays the same songs. They don't really care as much. So that's the way I view it.
Listen, man, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. On the jam, we are lacing you with game. Okay, you aspiring DJs, aspiring producers, man, you better be listening. You know what I'm saying? He's letting you know. You know, if you want to get your game tight, you got to do your research, man. And that's something about. That I've seen with a lot of DJs, producers, artists, period, man. You got to do your homework. And it seems like there's like a lot of sociology involved, like in terms
of,
you know, in terms of like knowing, oh, I'm going to play this because I see this crowd or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Just it's a whole lot. You have to analyze them. You have to stereotype them. Yeah, you do stereotype. It might sound bad because stereotyping is usually has a negative connotation, but you do. If you see eight dudes walk in, they all white tees and got, you know, looking trendy, it's like they want some trendy music. If they have more of a hipster or soulful look, they might go more on the kiss and grind, type of, you know, soulful house type of style. So you look at that, and then even with A's, I think that A's is the same way as Reason. It's where when it comes to old school jams, it's the same thing. Like the same way that Tupac is West Coast, but everybody likes him. That's the same way that Before I Let Go is for everybody of every generation. At the same time, if you playing for an older crowd, that's really they're all 50.
Right.
Before I Let Go, they still love that. But it's songs that only they know that's gonna hit them harder.
Right.
If it's people who are 65, it's songs that are gonna hit them harder. Like for songs from the 60s, like everybody knows Temptations. But if you play something like Marvin Gaye, Hitchhiker, Function at the Junction, is where people our age might be like, I don't know this, but people of that group are looking at you like, oh, wow, he young, he knows this. So it's the same way with A's, with everything to me. So.
Right. How did you start getting into the production side of things? Like,
I started mainly because I was rapping 94. That's really been 20 years. And
you don't rap no more?
Hell no. I can drunk freestyle.
Okay,
I
mean, everybody can do that. We'll do that off mic. We'll do that later.
I was just, it was 95. My dad was a producer / composer / whatever. So he had Cubase, he had a keyboard, and it was back way before Fruity Loops. So it was where you can't just download a program for free. Back then you had to have the actual equipment. So it was all stock sounds. I didn't have an MPC or anything. So I'm just playing. All he had was 808 drums and TR-909, which is even crappier than that.
Man,
so
you got to make those stock, work. Those stock, sounds, you got to make them work.
You can't even torque the EQ or nothing. So it was where I was just making stuff. It was so bootleg, I couldn't even track it through Cubase yet. So it was where I'm playing a drum beat live for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm recording out to a tape. I'm playing a tape to another tape player playing the piano on top of it. So it was nothing was quantized. You hear all type of mistakes. It was just horrible quality. But I mean, that's what it was back then. So,
look, I started the same way, around the same time, 94. My boy Surge, what up, Surge? Had the ASR-10, and he had to just play every snare, the whole beat, onto the tape, and then and then you had to pass the mic real slow, because if you had rhyming on the mic and it was going to wobble and shit, the Radio Shack mic.
One tape.
Oh, man, we got to do it all over, and then the tape messed up, so you got to get another tape, because you can only record on it so much.
Yeah.
Oh, technology.
So it changed. In 2001, I just started focusing on that. It was weird. You know, when you're young, especially back then, nobody was really rapping.
How old were you then?
94, I was 9. So I was like a little kid. I was a little kid. So it was where, by the time I got to high school, you know, high school is when it gets real. So 10th grade is where people are really telling me, oh, you ain't really dope as a rapper. You got to do this, this, and that. And then at first, you know, it sounds like hating. Like, hey, it's hating. They mad because whatever. But then the same people would tell me, your beats are tight, though. And I'd be like, so maybe it's not really hate. And I was just listening to it on my own. And I was listening to it comparing myself to myself. So when I would compare myself to what's on radio, at first it was just like, well, I'm not on radio, so it's different. But then when I really listened, it was like, okay, my rapping really is not where the rappers are on the radio. And I mean, radio was a different standard back then, obviously. Mm-hmm, but at the same time, I realized, okay, this producing side maybe is better. And when other rappers started coming to me for production, I was like, I'm just focused on this and just kind of let go of the rapping. Because I used to always have, you know, tapes, selling tapes for $2 on, you know, at school and everything. So,
mixtape hustle, the tape hustle, huh?
Yeah, all that. Okay. So I just focused on producing. And from there, everybody was just like, no, you actually are, like, you know, dope at it. So, and back then it wasn't nearly as competitive. It was where, as I said, you couldn't just get Fruity Loops until maybe 2000, 2001. But by 02, 03, it was a lot of people who were producing, but I had like a 8-year advantage on them, so I still know how to, you know, I had a big advantage is knowing how to play piano. I played piano, you know, I had lessons doing that too, I still had that in. So by the time it was 04, it was where I ended up linking with Black Wall Street, and it was just like, I didn't even expect nothing but a song. I was like, if I didn't get one of Game's artists to be on one of my songs, I'll be happy. When Game's manager was like, no, we're trying to sign you and put you on, it's like one of his producers too, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, I'll roll with that. Great.
I'll roll with that, so
awesome.
That was it.
When it came down to, I guess, when you started DJing, did you, you were saying you were first playing it off of like Windows Media.
Yeah.
We started like off of like Winamp. Winamp. At Napster. You know what I mean? But yeah. Like, when you said, oh, I'm going to really do this DJing thing, like you went and got turntables or like.
Yeah. It was where I always thought about DJing my whole life, but it was where I was always a music head, a music elitist. And one thing that I can say is that being a music head does not make you a good DJ at all. Mm. It doesn't at all. It's where, because you're not going to be connected with the crowd. And it was where I knew that. I realized it was where I didn't like what was on radio half the time. I didn't like what was in the club half the time. So it was where I knew that I wouldn't be a good DJ because I don't like what they like. So it's like I'm the type, I was feeling like I'll play whatever I want to play. So I felt like it wasn't a good move early on. Then by 07, I was just doing our own parties and people would ask me to do stuff. Even my first couple parties were hard because it was where I was just an old school head and I was in college. And I was old. I was 22. So dealing with 19-year-olds who I'm just trying to play, you know, I might be playing some damn Al Green at like a little house party. They like, why are you playing this old shit? I play something new. Mm. Play this new, play Soulja Boy Crank That. And I hated that song. It was like, so that's what really made me say, okay, do I really want to do this? But I felt like, you know what? As long as I can integrate what I like enough into it to where I enjoy doing it, but I still please them, right. I'll be good. So I had some internship money. I just spent all my internship money on some equipment. And I was like, I'll see what happens. If I don't make but $10 back, I'll just sell all of it. I might lose money, but whatever. I'm going to just try it. I bought everything at one time. Basically, I had like $82 left. So like, it was enough to eat, but I couldn't get no shoes or nothing. So I was like, I have to make money doing this. So I just started hitting up people on campus like, oh, you having a, it could be a damn auction, a dating auction. Like, just give me $40 and I'll come and do your dating auction. I'm bringing all my equipment, turntables, everything, getting paid $40. Didn't even care. Like, let me get the experience. Let me get the exposure.
Right.
And it was where, like, everybody who was a music head, they all connected with me because they saw where I was coming from. So it took me a while to connect with the people who were just straight club heads because I didn't like a lot of music. Like, even back then, I didn't like a lot of the boozy, webby stuff in 07. It was where it was noise to me, but when you become a DJ, you start liking stuff you didn't like before at the same time. So Soulja Boy, I didn't like Crank That at all. I hated that. But I was like, okay, I'm a DJ. I have to at least hear what he has on the album. Played the album. I was like, what is it? Shoot 'em Up? All right, it's whatever. I heard Dunk. I was like, I kind of fuck with this. Yeah. Like, it's kind of banging a little bit. So,
especially when you hear it on some speakers. On you hear speakers.
Then when you play it and people dance to it, it's like, okay, I kind of get what makes a move. So you start seeing it. You enjoy it in a different way. So at this point, I could play songs that I would never listen to in the car on my own, but I know where it's going to bring the crowd, and you enjoy the crowd more so than enjoying the music on your own.
Right.
So that's what you have to kind of adjust with as a DJ. So
I mean, damn, how long have I known you now? Because I think I knew you before I had heard you DJ through Ashton. What up, Ash? Yeah. But then I remember one time I had heard you DJ. I was like, oh, yeah, he's official. He knows how to DJ. And but between all of that, so what year did you actually start DJing in?
I would say it was like 2007. So it was before I moved back to LA.
2007?
Yeah.
So
I got back here 7 years. Like summertime 08.
So through that time, you learned like seemingly everything, like scratching, all that stuff. So
I picked it up quick because I already was making beats. So I just knew everything about music on that side. I knew what BPMs were. Mm-hmm. I knew how the energy worked. My dad's a drummer, so I just knew rhythm. So it was where even with scratching, even after 2 weeks of scratching, I might not be able to cut up and do no crab scratch, but I knew how to scratch on beat.
Yeah.
And in the club, people don't care if you scratch at all, really. They just want to hear music. So it was where...
Yeah, that's true.
It was as long as I could do a basic baby scratch, I knew that. And I was just watching videos over and over, and I just picked up everything. So the hardest adjustment, I would say my first year was just knowing that every crowd was different. Like, I remember coming back in 08 thinking that, okay, if I have an older crowd, they're going to like older music. So my boy Damu was, he's about 42 now. He's a little bit older. So when I was 23, he was like 32, damn near where we are now. So he would have me open up or do, sometimes he would have me do his whole parties in Ladera Heights, like backyard parties. The whole crowd would be between like 28 and 35. So I would assume, okay, well, I'm younger than them, but I like 90s music the most. So I'll be trying to play all 90s. They would get mad, especially the women, especially like no hate at all, but it always felt like women always liked the newer music compared to the guys. So that's how it was. So it just took me a while to adjust because it was where I'll be playing old and they'd be, why you playing this old stuff? Like it's 2008, like, you know, and it was just like, I don't even like the songs that's out now. I don't get why y'all do, but it took me a while just to realize, okay, this is what they like. And then it's a lot of psychology, like you said earlier. It's where you could play old songs and they love them, but it's all timing. It's like when they sober, I don't know what it is. Early in the night, they just like newer stuff. And then after they hear all the new songs, you play the old songs, and they erupt to them.
Yep.
You can't play Poison at 11:30 because it's just going to be like, it's just not going
to
hit
early, too early for that.
It's not going to hit the same way.
It needs to be the appetizer to get into the new stuff. Yeah. At a certain point, it's like, okay, look, we need this drunken love, man.
Yeah, they just want that. Yeah, yeah, they really do. So, yeah.
So between all that and seemingly, especially, and maybe I could be wrong, but the ascent happens with the McDonald's flavor battle. Like, how'd you get into that?
With that, somebody hit me up around October just asking if I wanted to apply for it. I know my boy Behan and Jam X, they were both in it earlier. So I was like, okay, I'll apply. I probably won't get in there, you know. Because I was just, you know, because I guess it's hard to judge how big you are as a DJ. It's extremely, really impossible. Like, the easiest way for most people is just looking at Twitter followers. People just judge nowadays, we have 30,000 versus 5,000, you know. Right. So I was like, okay, I'll probably be going against people who are on radio, who are on TV. I'll probably lose, but as long as I'm in there, I'm good. They picked me. I was like, oh, they picked me for the top four for West Coast. I was like, okay. I might not win, but I'm going to go for it because I'm going against people who got like 65,000 followers versus my 5. But low-key, they be buying them followers. But anyway, aside from that, it's where like, so, you know, I got in there and then the first day or two, I'm like, I got a head start. I was just pushing it hard early. And I'll be blunt. The main reason I won, obviously, is because of my mixes that I started putting out last year. I started putting out the mixes heavy, really, with the timeline a year ago and a couple before that. And it was where... Because of those mixes being online, it's where people all over are going to vote for you. So it's not just like a local following. It's people who I never even knew who I was would be like, yeah, listen to all your mixes. I have 15 of them on my phone. That's all I listen to. So they're voting for me off that. So it's where, because it's called a battle, it's flavor battle. Of course, like the elitist DJs, the ones who are technically great, would look at it like, well, it's not a real battle because, you know, artistic, he can't even do this and that. And I'll be real. It's people who will kill me when it comes to the technical side of like battling. But see me in the club, you can't fuck with me. I bet you can't. And that's the thing. And it's like, they don't get that. And the flavor battle was more of a thing about who can rock crowds and parties and who has, you know, who can bring people together on that side. So that's what it was about. So even with that, it was a little bit of drama with the flavor battle. You know, I ain't going to say nobody's name and everything, but you know, it's just
a little bit of something, you know. I didn't know that.
Little things. I'll just say that when I won, you know, and, you know, before that, it was a little bit of suspicion as far as, you know, it wasn't the tightest security when it came to voting. But whatever it was where some people were obviously doing, you know, doing things to give themselves an advantage. And then whatever happened, I won. You know, I won fair and square. Yet people who are obviously, you know, doing things to their advantage, they put things on Instagram talking about artistic hat. People from the SoCal McDonald's telling people to vote for him. So he had an inside connection and he didn't even get the votes. People were inside voting for him, cheating for him. So... We handled that. It's squashed. Everything is all good. But yeah, that's what it was.
Listen, let me.
It's real.
Yeah, it is. Right. Let me just say something real quick. I want to say something real quick. Let me preach real quick.
Yeah.
As a person, because now I feel like I can actually call myself a DJ because I actually bought my own speaker. You know, I've noticed that, and this is in all artist communities, seemingly.
Yeah.
That. And I'm going to lay a little bit of game here. It's not enough to be technically good. Not even enough to just hustle. You got to have both of those sewn up to the maximum. You know what I mean? And I know that artistic, like, understands his music. He be on his grind, as you can clearly hear. And that's why a lot of people don't win. Period. That's why you don't get as many gigs. Because... you're not hustling.
Yeah.
You're not doing your research. You're not, you know, expanding beyond yourself and not just, you know, you're being selfish talking about, well, I'm only going to do this. All right, fine. If you only want to do that, but then when you get branded that way, don't be surprised that you're not expanding outside of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. So when somebody else wins, period, like, that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially when somebody is really making their moves and being on the other side of things, like sometimes having to hire artists and be the artist myself, I have to realize, like, as much as somebody might accuse me of X, Y, and Z, like, no, I know that I put in the work. And so it's nothing when I tell people, vote for me on this, and they say yes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So some of y'all that want to sit there and be mad about where you are in your position, ask yourself, are you doing the maximum hustle that you could really be doing? Are you really doing the research? Are you really understanding your craft? You know what I'm saying?
Are you pushing yourself? Are you challenging yourself? Getting out of your comfort zone and just like, I don't, like you said, like, I don't really like this kind of music, but this is what I want to do. So I need to understand what they like.
Yeah. Look, man, you know, that's a big part. If I decide I'm going to be a chef, you know, no, I don't like peanut butter. But if I need to learn how to work with this shit in order to satisfy more people that like peanut butter, then what the fuck am I going to do?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's not always about you, especially at least not at the point in which you're trying to ascend in the realm, in the craft. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
If I can just interject. Of course. What I've noticed about the greatest of the greats, majority of them realize that their task or their duty or whatever that they do is always bigger than them. Mm. And that's what makes them great. It's not about just what I like, what are my interests, what makes me feel good. It's what's for the betterment of the people that I serve.
Right.
And that's what makes somebody go from just good or cool to the great. You know, the greats know that it's always bigger than them. And it's about the people that hear them. That's what makes a DJ go from like, okay, cool, he's local, he's good, to like, we need to contact him. Yeah. Like, that's that dude.
Yep.
Because he doesn't just care about what he likes. It doesn't play just what he wants. Like you said earlier, you know, it's about a pleasing to the crowd and making sure that every venue that you go to is catered to specifically. And that's what makes you memorable.
For sure.
Thank you for bringing her here. Thank you. Thank you.
It's all work.
Couple quick questions before we get into these songs, because we, you know what I'm saying, we got a bit of a time limit. But a couple quick questions before we get into these songs. Let's say your favorite three songs to play, just for you, like when you at the party.
Oh, you mean for myself matter, or just for the reaction?
Yeah, just for you. Favorite three songs to play that probably most often get a reaction anyway, but just regardless, your favorite three songs to play.
I'm going to say, what would I say?
And it may be just for now, but I mean, at least.
I'm going to just say like a Sugar Free, All Right, Geek My Beat. Like, I don't know. That song is just like.
Sugar Free?
Yeah, it's because that beat and just, it's just.
Which one?
I'd rather give you my bitch. It's just so unorthodox. It's just like the beat. Just like, it's so out of pocket, but it's the beat. Like, it's just. I don't even know. You can only mix up a couple songs. It's so fast and unorthodox, but it's just a banger. I would say that. I would say it's such a banger. I would say try, but check the rhyme.
There's
so many breakdowns in there. There's so many things you can play around with on there.
Yeah.
And I would say Funkin' for Jamaica, because it's just that bass line just goes so nuts. It's just like,
And also, because this has been kind of a new topic of discussion, but I think especially interesting for you as a DJ. Let's say maybe three songs that should stop being played.
Like classic, like legendary.
Three songs where you're like, yo, I tell you, two of mine, Return of the Mac.
I rarely ever play that.
Return of the Mac needs to die.
Yeah.
I already know. Well, Chris, you'll say there is. Chris, go ahead and say yours. What's the one that needs to die, man?
Oh, the Montel Jordan song.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, I hate. I've never liked that song.
Him and Kim hate that song. Him and Kim is so tired of that song. I can.
It's
deal
always
with it.
Gonna work. It's always
it,
gonna
it
work.
It does work, but I'm just like,
I can deal with it. The other one for me is that Fat Man Scoop. The
I never play that. Be faithful. You gonna hurt
that?
What's that?
Be like,
oh god. Is this? I don't know. Is this? It's something about it. I mean, it worked back in the clown dance era. It was cool when we were doing the little left, right, clown dance, jump up.
It was good in 2002.
Yeah.
After about 2004, I was like, yo, if all of you DJs don't cut it out.
Y'all rarely ever play any of those songs. Like, rarely ever. So,
anything else? Anything for else me, you're like, cut it
it's,
out, man.
It's a lot of hard calls. Like, I kind of want to say Candy Rain, but I'm not. It works. It's weird.
No, come on. Not Candy Rain.
That. No, because, I mean, I still like it. It's just that I think the thing with me I realize is that I only hate the fact that certain songs from, like, certain eras, you only hear that when it's songs that don't get played. Like, personally, like, Candy Rain is still a banger, but I would much rather play a Da Brat Give It To You.
Oh,
and you never, ever hear that. But when you play it, people are like, oh, like, so And even back then, I like that song way more.
But so see, the thing is, you got to be kind of black to understand Give It To You. Like, Candy Rain was kind of a...
poppy.
Yeah, it was kind of a hit. Heard some sing-along, like,
yeah. More sing-along, right, but
but... I hear you.
I wouldn't really say Candy Rain needs to be retired. I would say... I'm not even going to say The Wobble, because, I mean, your auntie loves it. My auntie loves it, so...
You don't like that one either. Yeah. I'm over it.
All those songs is burnt out. For right now, I'm going to say... Happy is getting there. Only for our crowd, I'm gonna say that is where for our crowd is getting there.
I've heard some dope remixes though.
I heard a go-go one. The go-go one banging.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta hear that.
Yeah. I would say what's some songs that's just never be played? I think it's probably messing me up because I don't even have them in my crates, so I can't even think of them because I don't play them.
Yeah.
But when I hear them, like, I'm not gonna say Poison, I'm not gonna say It Takes Two, I'm not gonna say Chub Rock.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say California Love, but just like with anything else, I'm going to say California Love is where I don't play it. I only play it if it's for a mixed crowd.
Yeah.
There's a black crowd. I'm playing While You Bullshitting. I'm playing Let's Get High. It's just like.
We talked about that actually with the homie Jesse. Jesse Fairfax. What up, man? He said California Love, it needs to go.
Yeah. I mean,
look, I was over it the year it came out because it was everywhere. Ooh,
they killed that song.
Any song that gets overexposed is going to be like that. Yeah. Like, so. If anything else, Blurred Lines.
Over it.
I mean, we over it. Like,
is Drunken Love done? Is it done?
I just told my boy No Size earlier. I was like, it sounds crazy, but it never really got an amazing reaction from my crowds.
Really?
As big as it was, it never really got the best reaction that I expected it to get. And like now when I play it, it's like, to me, it fits more with the end of the night slow grind than like the prime time.
See, one person actually brought it up. The homie Brandon, what up, B? He said, because of the way that I played it or whatever, he was like, Drunken Love should be played after midnight.
Yeah, definitely after midnight.
You know what I'm saying? And he's
nowadays it's damn near 1:30. It's almost like
play it next
to Body Party, almost like play it next to. Yeah. To freaking you and
That's your song. Huh? Yeah. That's your song.
Party.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Got it.
To me, it's more of an end of the night now because it got overexposed with a million memes and just like I said earlier, whenever songs get played too much, it's just
too
like
much.
Some songs die and come back, but a lot of songs like
and see
once they die, it's a wrap.
Look, man, I'm a refrain from the rant, but I'm just saying like there's too many songs that are getting played out too quickly because there's not enough.
It's not.
Step the game up. We got too many of these songs that are, and even some of these labels and the radio stations, like, cut it out, man.
Yeah.
Like, there's other good stuff out there. Like, quit. You're draining the lifeblood out of all this. Stop it.
Yeah. I mean, and right now, I was even thinking, because I did Zanzibar 2 or 3 weeks, 3 weeks ago, and it was where I almost wanted to tweet Beyonce, like, hey, stop making music, because that's all they fucking asking for. And it's just like... I have 5 girls come up to me at 10:15. You know, baby, and I'm just like, look, like,
stop it.
Like, I miss the days. I mean, I wasn't even there in the '80s, but I wish I could have seen when it was a Chaka Khan and a Tina and a Patrice Rushen, even and like, where it's 20 different female artists and an Evelyn Champagne King where you could play.
Beyonce. And the thing is that with those same people that you named and even some of the other jams, you know that the DJ is going to play that.
Yeah.
And if the DJ doesn't play that song, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't understand what's going on right now. So you don't need to be DJing unless you know needs to be played right now.
Exactly, So I just feel like, I wish it was like, I wish even Keisha Cole had more Let It Go. Let It Go in 07 was just like the banger of bangers. Like, I wish it was more than just Beyonce and even Rihanna. She's more on the pop side, but it just feels like it's only her. It's like, if it ain't Beyonce, it's like every other R&B song right now is just like, it's trying to be a hit, but nothing's really catching. It's just like, they trying to go the Mustard route half the time, and it's like, Mustard's the homie, but it's where... That style just needs to develop a little bit more. I'm not even talking about Mustard. I'm talking about just people who imitate him making R&B songs.
It's just not enough diversity.
Yeah, you have to mix it up because you got to at least add some little chord changes to it and make it crescendo. It can't just be same monotone singing. In the club, turn dabs. It's like, that's not going to make a classic R&B hit. It's just not.
It's usually the artist or people imitating that artist.
That's all it is. Whatever is hot, people can follow it. That's how it's going to be.
Come on, man. We got to do better than that, man. Yeah. Well, speaking of all that, let's go ahead and let's get into the jams of the evening, man. We're going to start it off with Chris. Chris is going to do the light introduction of the jam that he's picked. I don't even know what he's picked right now. So this is going to be interesting. He's going to do the light introduction, and we're going to try to figure out what it is.
I will give you all a hint. This I'll probably get the artist away. Y'all figure out. This is a group who's been doing it for 20 years. They are celebrating 20 years and, you know, are out and doing their thing. This song, you know, the first two I picked, I knew people would really were real popular. This one is kind of, for me, this album is my favorite out of all of their albums. Mm. To me personally, it's just, it's my favorite. I wouldn't say it's their best album, but it's my favorite. And this song just, it just be grabbing me. I'm sure you guys can guess who the group is.
I think I know.
You can say it.
What's your first guess? Huh?
Oh, Outkast.
You say Outkast? Outkast?
Yeah, okay. That's
what Outkast?
Yes, it is.
Okay, okay.
Well, you said 20 years and they're back and doing... Well, there's a lot of 20-year anniversaries right now.
Blackstreet's 20 years right now, too.
Oh, Blackstreet's doing 20-year anniversary?
No, really?
Yeah. Before I Let Go, all those 94.
But they're not going to 40 festivals.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. They ain't doing nothing. Teddy Riley and them.
Blackstreet. All right, yeah. Outkast. You said this is your favorite album, and your favorite. God damn,
I can't tell which album though.
Is it on AT Aliens?
No.
Damn.
But the funny, that is my album. I think for them, I can play straight through.
Equimini?
Nope.
Southern Playlisted?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's on the first album. Yeah. Oh,
should I just play it for you?
No. Hold on. Your guess? What guess?
Nope. I'm just going here.
You don't have a guess? All right. Your guess. What's your guess?
Southern Playlistic.
Okay. And my guess is Hootie Who. That's my guess.
Close. This is Crumbling Herb.
I was going to say it, but I was like, yeah, he'll pick that. Damn, I was going to say it too. Like, yeah, that's right. Be banging. Yeah.
This is, first of all, man, Outkast should go on tour with the Isley Brothers. They just should. They just should.
Yeah.
They should just go on tour with the Isley Brothers.
Not with the way the Isley Brothers are trying to come. Well, Ron Isley now, with that new song that he came out with that don't like personally, he talks about, I'm going to tweet you, Facebook me. Like, really?
He got people who are 25 writing it for him, though.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
No.
It seems like he's trying to go into a genre that just does not
Him and Charlie be doing the same thing.
Yeah, so. Listen. My formative years were with Andre 3000 on the radio. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Andre 3000 was an example of, this is who's going to be hot right now. This dude is hot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and call it what you may, but even in his younger days, he was so ahead of him and Big Boy were so ahead of everything. And were lyrical. They had style. They came with their own sound. And it's like, man, like,
it was refreshing, man. When they dropped, it was like, this is really something different.
It was a whole different level. And it was where you can see where they came from. They came from the whole Far Side type of vibe at the time. Right. But they put a whole Southern twist to it. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked. Yeah.
And the fact that they changed, I mean, the fact that I don't know any other group that can go from their style of music in terms of what they talked about from this album to the next one.
Yeah.
A lot of people would be like, oh, you're not talking that trap shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, this album is so hood.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about smoking weed.
They switched it up each time. Yeah.
They grew up. They matured. Yeah. The ATL is. You're like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, this whole song makes me think of driving in a Cadillac. You know, down Crenshaw at least, but just I'm just crumbling her.
Got your one hand on the wheel.
Yes. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a beautiful summer day. I'm just
just coasting. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. It's that whole vibe to it.
What about you, Mo? Do you know this song?
In all honesty?
Yeah. You don't know this song?
But I'm loving it.
So yeah? You got a new jam now. You got a new jam.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I've always enjoyed Outkast, but it's not, I won't pretend like I've listened to every track on every album and just been a huge fanatic.
Yeah.
I haven't, but I've always appreciated what they've done. and the things that I've heard. And I've, you know, listened to a couple tracks here and there, you know, outside of some of the mainstream stuff. But this is pretty fresh. I love it. I was always on Andre 3000. When I heard him and his lyrics, I was just like, oh, Lord, take me now.
All that.
But
because of the lyrics. The lyrics.
Crazy, but them lyrics was nice.
Let's talk about something. Yeah.
You listen to the lyrics.
You have to listen. You have to read it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I do, which is probably why I don't listen to as much music as I used to.
Yeah. Got it.
What's wrong with stop playing? Let Nick. What's wrong with that?
Exactly those lyrics.
Hey, I feel it.
Oh, man. Yeah, nah, this is the jam, man. This is the jam. All right, well, let's fade this out a little bit. Let's chat. Chris, any particular memories maybe attached to this song? Why you picked that song?
This was just a song that, I mean, this album I was just killing, and I'm the type of person, I always look for the album cuts. I mean, I know we had, you know, all their usual hits, and this song just, I was like, this song is cranking. I mean, of course it worked when you was crumbling her back in college. Shout out to the real HU, Hamptonites.
Niek.
Right?
Dillard.
Fam, you.
But it's just so, like, this song, it bumps, but it's so chill. It does feel like, you know, times I'm in the car just riding around. And whenever I put this album on, I have to play this song. And it was funny just when they were doing the 20th, they were at Coachella, and seeing people on Twitter like, oh, my God, I hope they do Crumbling Herb. I'm like, oh, shit. Motherfucker, don't want to Crumbling Herb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, this is just memories of just being 94. Damn, 11th grade. Just in the hip hop and just have my headphones on, just sitting back in the chair, eyes closed, just like, leave me alone. You know, only so much time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I'm just sitting back enjoying life.
Yeah.
Only got so much time. Let me just relax and enjoy it. That's just what I get from this song.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Monique, I guess this is your first time hearing it. So boom, already. But your impressions of hearing it.
You know, I've always been an Outkast, like, appreciator, and, I just really enjoyed, even though we were talking over it some, it was a very smooth kind of track, like, this is probably an awkward kind of scenario, but it reminded me as if I were, like, sipping a new bottle of wine. Mm. When you open it and you, like, you know, marinate and you take that sip and you're like, yes. And you just sit back and you just continue to sip and you just let it kind of just marinate. And I really enjoyed it though.
Word. So that's cool. Artistic.
That's one of those. My cousin Edward in Inglewood, he was the first person I know who was an Outkast fan. I remember going to his room back in 94 and just seeing a poster with the longest word I ever saw in my life at the time. And I was like, so how the hell do you pronounce that? And I remember him just playing that. He had an old 67 Mustang, so it was just fit with it. So it was weird. He was just dipping that around. And I feel like certain songs, it's weird, but music just hits you in the head where certain songs make you drive fast, certain songs make you drive slow. That's one of those songs you just coast to. So it reminds you of that. So it's weird. It's just one of those laid-back type of classics. And it's a fan favorite, like a cult classic type of song where even the casual Outkast fan who tells you, I love B.O.B., I love Roses, it's like, they ain't gonna know that song. They'll be like, oh, what's that? Like, oh, it's from the first album. I think I remember. Nah, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's one of them tight tracks. So,
Yep. That song reminds me of my homie who I haven't talked to in a very long time. Maybe he'll hear this and maybe I'll be able to reconnect with him. But the homie Jonte Austin. When I was in my younger days, I did some acting. And Jonte was my friend in the show, and he was from Atlanta, and I feel like one time we were just talking over the phone or whatever, and he just started rhyming to it because he was also a singer. And if you don't know Jonte Austin, I mean, he's written a lot
the
of
one
hits.
Who was with JD for a minute.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
I was thinking like yep.
And and I remember one point he was rhyming over the phone kind of around when Outkast came out, because at that time Atlanta didn't really there was no MCs that I knew out of Atlanta at the time.
The first ones to break.
Right. Yeah. And so he was rhyming along with the song in that style. And then that's when I heard Southern Playalistic and all that stuff. So it reminds me of him. And, you know, like I said, man, just, you know, Outkast was one of the first groups, at least even that song. Like, I feel like I could play that around my mom. You know, I feel like I can play that around older people that can, and they can understand that it's still paying homage to them. And that's why I say, like, you know, Isley Brothers or any of that stuff, they still have that influence going. So all that stuff. But yeah, you know, Outkast, Crumbling Herb, man. If you do not have Southern Playalistic, see, a lot of people, you know, attached to the more popular albums. And I tell everybody, even my younger cousins, I'm like, nah, you better get the first album, follow it all the way through, understand how this is working for them to get so popular. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, man, nah, that's the jam right there. So we gonna play this next one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we gonna play two for DJ Artistic real quick. Why don't you introduce the first one? Introduce the first one.
Okay, so this first one is from one of everybody's favorite artists, but the thing about him is that he has so many songs that a lot of his songs kind of get swept under the rug, it feels like, and only folks who were there in that time know those songs. So his name is Prince Nelson Rogers. Yeah, so this track here is called DMSR, you know. So it's
I don't know. You weren't supposed to say.
I'm supposed to say.
Too late now.
Edit.
Chris won't know the next one.
Do you even know what that song is, though? Do you even know what the song is?
Have you even heard it? It rings a bell, really.
That's the thing. So even with me saying the name, it's like, if you heard it, you'd be like, what is this?
Yeah, I need to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hold on. The next song we play, Artistic, you have to do the light. You have to do the teaser. We have to guess it.
Okay.
So here we go. Have you heard this song? Have you heard this song, Monique?
I'm about to find out.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to assume that you have not heard it. And we're going to go ahead and let this rock. Here we go. This was on Common's album, wasn't it? On Star 69 at the very end of the track. You know what I'm talking about?
I know the one you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, because Prince got credited for something on the album, and that part was.
He might throw.
Oh, I know this. Yeah.
You ever heard the intro? I was like, oh yeah, I know that.
One of them type tracks. So yeah.
His catalog, Jesus.
You got so much, That's where I
still
feel like
doing it.
Yeah, still got new songs. It's still banging. It's just like, So, don't even make
sense. When Prince comes on the track, you know what time it is.
You already know. It's like, it's Prince, So, it's one of those songs that sound more like a Morris Day song than the Prince, because, like, of course he did everything for Morris Day, but he gave Morris Day his funky type tracks.
Right.
Most of his were more pop. So this song was too funky to really cross over. It was too ethnic, you know.
He was like, oh, this is extra dark skin real quick. Let me
he got dark real quick.
A little dark skin.
Yeah. It's that July 10 type of Prince. Like,
Yeah, I do know this song. I do know this. I just never knew the name of it.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the jam, man.
That's right. Yeah.
When you say the jam, you're talking about this as an example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the way it hits you.
And there's like, it's funny because it almost seems like there's not a lot going on, but there's a lot going on. That's what Prince always did.
Yeah, it's minimalist, but it's where like every element in there is like perfect. The way it builds up, he'll throw you off, because at first a lot of his songs come in weird, and you like, what's about to happen? And you hear that first bass line, it's like, oh shit, okay. That guitar come in a little bit, so
What does DMSR stand for?
Dance, Music, Sex, Romance.
All right, there we go. It sounds like it's all in there.
Yeah,
he said, I'm going to make this track, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. That is very Princess's.
It really is a Prince type. Yeah.
When's the last time you played this at a party?
I played it. Actually, I did a. Did I play it at the 40th birthday I did last week? I think I did play it last week. Yeah. So it's one of those songs that people don't really know. It's like only certain crowds know it, but it's where I play it anyway, like, especially if the crowd is right for it. Like, if it's early enough, even if it might be my packing up song. Like, I'm packing up my turntables, and I'm hoping you're walking out, but you might walk out and do a little two-step to it.
How was the reaction when you played it? They were like, oh, shit.
Come on, their heads. Like, the crowd there, they didn't really know this much. They knew it when I played at an old school event a month ago. Everybody there was like 45, and they were just kind of looking at me like, how do you even know this type of song?
Yeah. They're like, what you know about that, boy? What you know about this DMSR?
Exactly. That's my prom song. Like, you know,
Yeah. All right.
Same type thing. So, yeah.
All right. That's DMSR. You know what I'm saying? We're going to quickly go into the next one. Well, before we do that, Chris, do you remember when you heard this?
Man, I do not, man. I've heard a lot of Prince just played over the years.
At barbecues.
Yeah, wherever. But you just like,
yeah.
What's that? Man, that is funky. And he's like, that's Prince. Oh, well, that's what he does.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. Play it. Turn it up to him.
Well, what Prince does is he makes jams. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. He says, that's going to hold myself up in here and make these jams.
Yeah.
And play everything. Play everything.
Mo, this is your first time hearing it too?
Yes, it is.
What'd you think?
For sure.
Any particular thoughts? Is this a different bottle of wine or is this like Hennessy?
This is straight Hennessy.
This is straight to the head. Just
right.
Straight to the stomach.
I don't even want that much ice in it.
Awesome. Artistic, when you first heard this song, like, did you find this song like during the research or was there a particular moment where you were like...
I heard it a million times. So I ain't really know what it was till probably last year. So it's one of those songs that I actually thought it was Morris Day. I didn't realize it was Prince because... I used to get their songs mixed up. Like, even when Tupac first sampled the 777-9311,
yeah.
I thought that song was Prince. I didn't know it was Morris. And then I realized it was Morris. I started listening to both artists. So
but it was Prince. But
it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same. But it's like Dre and Snoop. It's like,
yeah.
That's Snoop, but it's on Dre album. Like, it's the same thing. So the same with even, like, Get It Up. I heard Get It Up. I thought that was Prince, too. So it was where I thought this song was Morris. But it was where I started hearing it and listening to it. I was like, this song just goes. So, yeah. Uh-huh. I can't tell you exactly the day. It was probably a random. I'm in fourth grade at the neighbor's barbecue and looking at some 35-year-old with some booty. I don't know, something like that.
That's what this song is for.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it was about. Miss Parker.
Exactly.
It's the Miss Parker life track.
My auntie, y'all.
Hey, your auntie's fine, though.
Wait, Miss Parker?
Yes, that's my auntie.
The real Miss Parker.
So Ms. Cheyenne is like your cousin.
She's my auntie, y'all. Y'all better stop.
Good night.
Hey.
That concludes this episode.
All right.
I don't remember when I first heard this, man. I feel like I've heard it in a few places, but, like, you know, my sister was huge Prince fan. So it was probably playing around the house when I was in Oakland. My mom played it too. Like, my mom liked Prince, some of it at least.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so much.
But
yeah.
When Purple Rain came out and Under the Cherry Moon, like, it was Prince and Michael Jackson, man, all the time. And that song, like, if somebody hasn't sampled it, they've kind of done something. But I feel like it really, for whatever reason, that very beginning is really like that that, you know, Star 69 on that Common album, that ending interlude. It makes me think of that. We're going to play the second song. Now, light introduction, Artistic.
Light.
I don't know if, I kind of don't know if Chris may know this song or not, but light introduction to this song, at least either who it is or what, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying, without giving it away.
It's from an artist who we've known we've known him as an artist for like 10, 11 years, but we've known who he was as, you know, as an influence for 15. He's been around for 20 plus, and is where he has a huge song, and I personally feel like this song here, I'm not going to say it's better at all. It's not better. It's just that I feel like this song just has more of a jam feel to it. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's going to hit harder for, like, especially in the black clubs. I feel like this song is going to last longer than the one that he has that's the current hit. So, I'm going to say that.
Is it a rap artist?
Nah, he's damn near halfway. You might hear him called a rapper, but he's a singer. Okay. And really, I'm gonna call him a producer more so. But
yeah,
he cries all the time.
I'm gonna give you three guesses.
Does he cry all the time?
Yeah, he don't be crying too. Nah, he don't be crying too much.
Crying?
Nah, he don't be crying.
I'm already like, Drake ain't been around 20 years.
I didn't need 20 years.
Nah,
he don't cry that much, do he?
Oh, Drake? Oh, nah.
Jesus, like that boy be crying.
Nah. Yeah, this person.
Not R. Kelly, is it?
No. They sing more than they rap, and they produce a lot. Jeez. They produce a lot.
I would say producer, singer, then rapper. But even the rapper is more of... They do it. He got a rap verse out now.
Yeah.
He got a rap verse out right now.
Yeah, so. It's pretty dope.
So I'll say this. In the last year, he has hits where he's rapping on it. He's produced it without doing anything, and he's singing on one. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. So he's, yeah.
God, that's tough. I don't have a guess
yet. No, when you say, when you hear, you're going to be like, oh, man.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah, like, you know, that's, yourself. That's a rarity. I'm like, you do all that? Like, ooh. Yeah.
I'll also say that he's been part of two different groups. Two groups, seemingly, but two different groups.
And you can even say two camps or almost. Yeah.
Wyclef?
Two houses.
Damn. No. Not Wyclef.
You like, he's
good. In a modern in a modern way.
With those descriptions.
But I was like, really somehow now, guess.
Yeah. That's a really funny guess.
Yeah, it's probably going to kill me as soon as you like.
Yeah, you're going to be like, man, I'm going to hit. You're going to hate yourself.
Mo?
It's that easy.
When you first the beginning part, and he said camp, that's not him.
Damn, like, it's so easy.
I'll say this: he's been mentioned. He's been mentioned tonight. I wanted to say Pharrell. He's been mentioned tonight.
You said who?
I wanted to say Pharrell. Uh-huh. I was like,
that's probably it. Yeah,
because he was with.
Yeah.
No, that's probably is Pharrell.
Yeah.
It is Pharrell. Thank you. All right. So what song? We're going to give you two guesses each. What song?
This is the older song.
No, it's a new one. So I was saying that it's not as big as his current super hit, but I think that it might
be. Marilyn Monroe.
Nah. Nope. To me, have you heard the new album? Black song. It's more. It's his blackest song out right now.
Oh, okay.
Out right now.
But it's not a single yet, but I feel like it's about to take out.
It needs to be.
It's slowly getting played, but it's about to get played once people actually know about it. So you might not even know it yet.
As long as it's not that track they've been playing for the
podcast. Come get it, baby. They play it every day on commercial break.
Yeah, damn.
I'm tired of this. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
If you ain't got the album, you will know it.
All right.
I got halfway there. So
yeah. All right.
Okay. Yeah, you got that.
We'll go ahead and let's do it. This is Pharrell. Gust of Wind. This is with Daft Punk on it.
Yeah, Daft Punk is on there too.
See, there you go.
Yeah, this track is,
yeah, I like this song too.
Is this on his album?
Yeah, it's on Pharrell's album.
Okay.
What's that?
Aren't they going on tour
around
Daft Punk?
They should.
Oh, what?
I didn't know about that.
Nah, that's too much. No, they can't do all that.
I know Pharrell's going to be with Miguel or one of them at the Hollywood Bowl.
For real? I didn't know about that.
I like Pharrell.
Sorry. I had to make sure the bass got in there. Sorry. I was like, there ain't no bass coming in here.
Yeah.
No, that's important.
You gotta hear that.
But yeah, Daft Punk is definitely gonna be doing a
tour. Oh shit, that should be popping. Yeah, they making money with that one.
Yeah, no. When I got the album, I think I played this over and over and over again.
Yeah,
like I played it over and over, dude.
It's one of those songs. Even just like it's not happy, but it's where if you play it for an older crowd, The older crowd kind of likes it the same way that our crowd do because it appeals to them too.
Mm-hmm.
It has that kind of like
You can two step to this.
It's a two step appeal.
You know,
it feel real grown up. Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Definitely two step.
It has the bridge and everything. It's a fully developed song. It's
I mean, personally, I think this album has a lot of jams on it. Like, I mean, we could debate on certain aspects, but like. I'm happy with it. You know what I'm saying? It got the job done for me.
For sure, yeah. He appealed to every crowd he needs to appeal to.
Right.
He knows who buys the records, so he gonna, you know, make them buy them. So, yeah.
This is another one I feel like I'm in my car, you know. I'm in my car and I'm just... Or roller skating.
Oh, we got the skating song.
I'm thinking Chicago Step.
Chicago Step. Yeah, you can get down with that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just thinking like this is a perfect song for this hot ass weather.
We've been right. Gust of wind. You need a gust of wind in this hot ass weather.
Yeah. You need that.
Yeah, right. Let's go ahead and take this down. That shit is definitely jamming. Chris, your first time hearing it was now?
Yeah.
Really?
I might have heard it flipping through the album, little pieces, but yeah, I mean, the dude got talent. The dude can make a damn song. I mean, that's a great song. Just off the top, like, that really hits. I'm like, wow, I'm actually listening. Why didn't they hear that again? I need to repeat that.
Yeah.
So I can really catch everything. But that's nice. That's nice.
Right. Mo.
That was definitely smooth. Like, yeah. I haven't heard that song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was just finishing finals. I'm just, I feel let's it. Put yeah. that in the
yeah. area. You were kind of busy.
Yeah. Kind of busy.
All right.
But I've always really appreciated Pharrell's music, and I like Daft Punk as well. Mm-hmm. So that they've had a couple that Get Lucky and this.
Yeah.
Cool. Back to back.
Man.
Yes. Yeah. They on that road. So.
Yep. First yeah. time for you hearing it. Or
doing the usual DJ thing. Always, every time a new album comes out, I always either download it. I usually buy them too, or either way, whatever I have to do to get it. And then I was going through it, and you know, I know what to expect. I was like, it's Pharrell, so it's where I'm not gonna love every track. Cause a lot of songs aren't really made for my taste buds, but they're made for that universal appeal. So, heard the Marilyn Monroe. Okay, it's cool. I heard the Brand New. Okay, that's cool. I heard the Come Get It, Bae. All right, that's gonna be for the Zanzibar for like mm-hmm. the little mixed group. Then mm-hmm. I heard this and just the strings. I was like, hold up, what's about to happen on this one? Like, it actually, it's not sampling, but it's interpolating an old Alexander O'Neal song. Mm. I forget the name of the song, but it's the same way it comes in with the strings hitting like that. And then the verse came in. And I was just like, yeah, this right here is a banger. And it was where I already knew it was where it's not like a hype club track, but it's one of those songs that we need because it's not enough like. Early vibe tracks no more. Everything now is just trying to be a straight 12:30. I'm in the club, hype already, drunk type song. So it's one of them build up songs slash a cool down song. So it's like either you building up or either it's 135, 140, and it's time to go. But you're just trying to get a two step on real cool and smooth with it. So that's how I saw it.
Look, man, I make no reservations to announce that I am a illegal downloader. I do that, you know, however it needs to be done.
Yeah.
And the album came out. Yeah. And people were kind of talking about the album in various different ways in terms of what they liked. And so I went ahead and the bootleg copy that I had actually had some skips in it.
Mine, I had that one. Yeah, I had that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, this song had skips in it, and I still played it over and over.
Yeah,
I was like,
matter.
Yo,
I
will get the official copy as long as this is on it, because this shit is jamming. Like, and I don't remember what I was doing that night, but I feel like I was driving a lot that night, especially playing it. And this song, I just kept playing it over and over and over again, man. I couldn't. I had to force myself sometimes to get past it. But perfect summer song. It feels good to listen to. And that's it. Like I said, roller skating, just a good day. Like, and like you said, like, yeah, you know, you want to turn up, and that's kind of for the grimy, and some of this stuff is out right now. A lot of it is kind of dark sounding, and this just felt lighter. This felt like good. This felt
timeless feel, like we were saying, like about the jam being timeless. It's like half the 12 to 12, 30 songs right now ain't going to get played in 5 years. All this 55 BPM stuff is like, it's too slow now, but it's here. Like, this track here, it's not going to be a super smash hit, but it's going to be where 8-10 years from now, if you play it, people are not going to be like, why are you playing this? It's still going to work.
Like, they'd be like, that's the jam.
Yeah, it's still going to go.
Yeah, you talk shit that has that Alexander O'Neal sample. It gives you, it has that, like, it's this old soul feel
to it.
Just feel,
it hits you a different direction.
With strings and all that. You're like,
For sure. So,
Look, man, this has been fun. We got to make it come to a close. So, Chris, any announcements for the people out there that are listening?
Not really. Just make sure y'all check us out at blackisonline.com. Make sure supporting the jam and all the other great shows we got out. Brother Lemon Sports Happy Hour, The Break, Brown Girl Hour, Coach Connection. We love y'all's support. We appreciate it.
Monique, any announcements you would like to make? Is there any place that, you know, if you have like a Twitter or any Instagram, like folks want to be your friend, they're like, oh, Monique is so cool.
My Instagram's kind of, it's the number 2 and then to be beautiful and natural. You know, got to rock the natural. So.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I guess if you want to follow me, it's just kind of me showing people, you know, about what it's like to just live in the moment. So if you want to live vicariously through me, go for it. I'll show you a good time.
Great. Awesome. Artistic. Any, you know, constant dates, anything, you know what I'm saying? Where people, your residencies or places that can find you?
Right now I'm at Confidential Beverly Hills. Really every week on Fridays I'm there. Aside from that, the main thing's coming up, I'm doing the Essence Festival. I'm DJing the stage there. So I'm not sure if I'm going to be on the main stage or the semi-main. If I can be on the same stage as Prince, I'm going to get a selfie with him, and then I'm going to be just done forever. Yeah, yeah. I can retire that next day, but I'm going to be doing that. But it's always things coming up, so check out all my mixes, djartistic.com, which is djr-tistic.com, Instagram, Twitter, at @DJ_RTISTIC, and that's it. I'll see y'all somewhere. Holler at me.
You already know, it's your boy Merc80 from around the way, MERC80 on everything, you know, Merc80.com, Merc80 on Twitter, Merc80 on Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. And if I know you and you're cool, then you'll get to know my government name when I add you on Facebook. And, you know, Bashment Boogie, Throwback Thursdays, and The Jump, all those things, you know, find my Instagram or any of those things and you'll see the flyers. This is another episode in the bank, man. We did it again. Jams complete, definitions complete, and that's it. So we'll see you on the next one. Holler.
Be like, oh shit, that's the jam. He'll 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 be like, oh shit, that's the jam.